So let's start with the big picture question. Since you last updated us at the start of this school year, generally speaking, how well has implementing the Memorandum of Understanding gone?
Well, okay, I think your big picture question here is probably going to be the easiest one you're going to ask me. A lot of the big planning issues have been resolved relatively smoothly. Essentially, here's what's going on. Two of the Christina District's elementary schools in Wilmington will be closed in June. Then in August, there are going to be two schools, Bancroft and Byard, that will be serving grades 1 through 8, and a third school, Stubbs, serving pre-kindergarten and kindergarten. The new attendance lines have been drawn, and the students have been told which schools they will be attending. There's been a new school calendar developed. It's added 15 days to the school year and extra days on top of that built in for professional development for staff members. All of that's been approved. The leadership teams for all three schools have been named. So these are all very significant steps forward.
When you last looked at this, the Memorandum of Understanding between Christina's Teachers Union and the district was still up in the air. That did get worked out. What does it do for the teachers, and where does the district stand with staffing for its new school configuration as we're moving forward?
Well, again, this is a piece that looks pretty good right now. The MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding with the Teachers Union, contains multiple incentives for teaching in city schools. There's a $4,000 bonus that teachers receive for making a two-year commitment. They get extra money for classroom supplies. There are additional funds being made available to them for tuition reimbursements for graduate school classes, that sort of thing. And they've also gotten, this is very important, protection against any layoffs following this school year and the following next school year, the 2019-2020 school year. Now, that package overall was attractive enough that 113 teachers requested assignments to the city schools. 92 of those teachers were given positions at the school that was the first choice among the three that they wanted. So you've got 113 teachers already in positions. 92 of them are where they really wanted to be. Now this leaves 36 openings, according to Christina Superintendent Rick Gregg. 36 may seem to be a fairly high number, but you know, as far as he's concerned, that's a really good place to be in March.
Well, like the last time we talked about this whole process, your piece this time suggests that there's no time for Christina and the state to rest on these bits of good news that you've just told us about. There are still issues to address. Let's try to hit them one by one here. First, the buildings affected by this reorganization plan need work. How much work? How long is this going to take?
Okay. Now, because of these changed grade configurations, all three of these schools will need substantial renovations. For example, classrooms that were originally built in a middle school like Byard to serve eighth graders aren't necessarily going to work well for kids who are first and second grade students. And then there are these security issues as well. I mean, not only the heightened security that goes into just about every school renovation these days, but also in planning ways to separate the grade levels. They've got first and second on one floor, third through fifth on another, sixth through eighth on the upper floor. So what they're doing is they're designing patterns. They'll, you know, keep the big kids out of the first grade areas and keep the first graders from being able to wander up onto the third floor where the eighth graders are. And, the concerns that you've got here, Bancroft and Byard, are kind of similar. School configurations are certainly different now, but they are both going to become 1-8 buildings. Over at Stubbs, it's a little bit different. Much of the renovation there involves transforming the upper level of the school, which had been serving grades 3-5, into what's being called this dual generation center. That's a place where there are going to be offices and open spaces and the like, where parents and community members are going to be able to come in and to look for jobs, to receive counseling, attend workshops, and so on. So, essentially, you're taking the top floor of an elementary school and turning it from classrooms into a space that's going to be primarily used by adults. Now, We've got a budget of $17.5 million for these projects at all three schools. $15 million comes from the state and the rest comes from the Christina District. But the architects still haven't given the district final cost estimates on the projects at each of these buildings. So it's not really clear whether the money that's available is going to cover everything that the state and the district want in the buildings. Now, on top of that, the work can't start until school ends in June. With this new longer school year, teachers go back to work in the Wilmington schools on August 5th. Students start classes on August 12th. So they're acknowledging, I mean, there's no way that all of this construction work is going to get done on time. So, and again, the timeline isn't really firm yet. So some of these students are not going to be in their regular classrooms at the start of the school year. Eventually, they will be moving into them, but we're really not quite sure when. So some of the kids are going to be right where they're supposed to be at the start of the school year. Some of them are going to be moving around a little bit. And there's a lot of uncertainty there.
Another big piece of this plan is adding the wraparound services that have been promised that you alluded to. Where does that stand?
Okay. Again, the MOU calls for development of a series of wraparound services. These are things like health centers in the schools, mental health counseling, expanded before and after school programming, things like that that would benefit students and their families as well. Now, this programming requires a lot of collaboration among other state agencies and with nonprofits. You know, we're talking about groups like United Way, Children's and Families First, Boys and Girls Clubs, other social service agencies. Now, the state is putting up $1.5 million for this programming. As with the construction issue, it's not clear how much that money is going to buy. Now, in case the $1.5 million is not enough, the state says it's going to be asking foundations for grants to support these initiatives. More significantly, as with the construction, none of these agreements have been signed yet, so there's much more work to be done, resolving who does what and ironing out the details associated with the programming. Now, you know, with the number of partnerships between schools and social service agencies growing over the years, that's helpful because the schools are somewhat familiar with this sort of thing. But in this instance, some of the level of planning involves moving into what really amounts to virgin territory. Putting these pieces together is in many respects much more difficult than it was doing things like redrawing attendance lines.
And on top of those two issues and the associated uncertainty, there are a couple of wild cards now. The first appears to be somewhat minor. That's the state's point person on this effort. Darrell Green has left his job as head of the Department of Education's Office of Innovation and Improvement to become, as we've reported, superintendent in the Red Clay School District. What impact, if any, could Darrell Green's move have on this whole process?
Well, I don't know if you can call this one a minor issue. To maintain the momentum in all this implementation of the planning, it's important that Green's job be filled promptly and with a manager who is strong and respected. However, applications for the position can still be filed through Saturday, March 23. And then comes screening and interviews. So the job is likely to be vacant for a couple of weeks, more likely for about another month. Now, a group of Department of Education managers will be sharing the load in the meantime, but Green had an incredible network of connections, and he had built a great reservoir of goodwill that will be hard to replace. To have him leave when there's so much to do in completing arrangements for all these wraparound services is a little bit unsettling. Now, on the other hand, you know, and it's good to be able to say this, it's not like Darrell Green has left the state. He's right next door to Christina. He's in the Red Clay School District. It's not going to be a tough job for Christina Superintendent Rick Gregg to pick up the phone and give him a call. And, you know, and Gregg's certainly not going to be reluctant to do that. But I have heard also some concern about Green's successor. And I realize, you know, the applications are still coming in. But, you know, he was the ideal choice for this job in the first place. He's a strong leader. He was familiar with Christina from having worked there before, having also worked in the Brandywine School District. He knew a good deal about the city of Wilmington. So, you know, the caliber of his replacement will be seen by some people as an indication of the strength and of the depth of Governor Carney's commitment to genuinely improve schools in Wilmington.
The much bigger wild card, not surprisingly, has to do with money. Christina has a tax referendum vote coming up at the end of April. Tell us a little bit about what the district's looking for, and probably more importantly, if it fails, what are the implications for the city reorganization and Christina as a whole?
Well, you know, this is a really, really interesting situation. You know, the referendum isn't directly tied to the Wilmington Schools reorganization. That reorganization is going to be carried out no matter what. However, the district is looking for a 34-cent tax increase over 3 years. If approved, the typical house in the district, one that has an assessed value of $64,100, would see a tax hike of $218 by the third year. That's about $18 a month. However, if the referendum fails, it will have serious implications for the suburban portion of the district and for the teachers who work there. Here's why. The MOU that we talked about between Christina and the state spells out numerous improvements for Wilmington schools. And the MOU between Christina and its teachers gives those teachers assigned to those schools in Wilmington 2 years of protection against layoffs. Now, generally, when referendums fail, one likely outcome is budget cuts. And that means that some teachers are going to lose their jobs. And generally, in most other situations, those cuts tend to be spread throughout a school district. But the situation in Christina this year could be different because that MOU appears to insulate Wilmington schools and Wilmington teachers. And that means that the impact of any cuts will fall disproportionately on schools and teachers in the suburban portion of the Christina district. As you know, Tom, Christina is one of the few, very few, non-contiguous school districts in the country. And some of the resentment that began with desegregation in 1978 still smolders in that suburban part of the district. Busing, at least from the suburbs to the city, has pretty much gone away. But there are still some suburban residents in the Christina district who blame low-income kids from the city for the district's overall low performance in the state's annual school testing program. So there's a potential here for a lot of discontent if the referendum fails, from families in suburban schools who might endure the bulk of the budget cuts, and from teachers in those schools who would have a greater risk of losing their jobs. Needless to say, successful passage of the referendum could prevent a lot of problems from developing, but the history of school referendum votes in Christina and throughout Delaware is that the district usually fails to get what it asks for the first time around.
And with all those potential pitfalls still lurking out there, especially that last one, how confident is the Carney administration and the district now that this is going to get done and have the level of impact they want it to have on Wilmington schools?
Well, at the state level, right now anyway, there are no alarm bells ringing. When I asked the Department of Education about some of these issues, the response I received included phrases like, "The state continues to work with the district, and we will coordinate resources with the other state agencies to integrate services." In other words, we're working on it, and we expect to get it done. Now, when I spoke to Christina Superintendent Rick Gregg, he wasn't too concerned about students being moved from one part of one school to another while construction is underway. He thinks that's manageable. But when I asked him about the possible implications of a failed referendum, there was a long pause, like this, before he started to answer. I think Rick Gregg has confidence in his staff, but he's aware that potholes lurk in the road ahead. While I'm hearing words of confidence, I suspect that some of the people making those assertions are speaking with their fingers crossed behind their backs. And finally, let's keep the really big picture in mind here. Governor Carney's plan to improve Christina schools in Wilmington was at first seen as a lesser version of a plan promoted by former Governor Jack Markell. And that plan wasn't nearly as comprehensive as what was recommended by the Wilmington Education Improvement Commission. So, whatever we get in August as a result of this effort, and to be fair, it really has been quite an effort, it's still only a first step toward giving Wilmington students the educational opportunities that they're going to need to succeed.